are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Yes, happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this Monday, July 1st, 2024. We are back. That's right, baby. We're back in the studio for at least a couple of days here as we get the week started, get the month of July started. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, man. Excited to be back in the studio. Got a lot to catch up on today in terms of sports, what's been going on over the last few days. Also, got to catch you up on some crazy events over the last, 36 hours in our lives over here. And so all sorts of things to get into today. But hope you're doing well. Hope you had a great weekend. Of course, we were not here on Thursday or Friday. I was out of town for a bachelor trip for one of my best friends up in Ohio. We all got together, went to a big lake house up in Michigan. We had a fantastic time, man. We really did. We had a really good time, and everybody made it home safely, and nobody got in too much trouble. So all in all, it was a really, really good trip, some much needed time off. And this week, as you most of you probably know, but I will continue to remind you, we are here today on this Monday, and we're here tomorrow on the Tuesday. After that, for my show in particular, on the line 2-4, right here on ESPN, we will not be here Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. All right, we're out for the 4th of July. Company gave us a couple of days off, so we're going to have that. So no shows Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Back to normal next week, okay? Next week is 100% normal, back on track. Everything's good to go as we count down towards SEC Media Day. So that's sort of what the schedule looks like for this week. We're here today. We're here tomorrow, right? Today, we're catching up on everything that's happened from over the weekend. Tomorrow will be a jam-packed show. We'll have Lindsey Crosby with us. As far as I'm concerned, if that changes, we'll obviously let you know. And then also Daryl Dapperich, Double D, will be with us tomorrow as well. But for the show today, as it is July 1, that's right, it is the 1st of July. Congratulations, you made it through June. First month of the summer is down and out and away. It's out of here. And we are really on the countdown now for college football to get underway. 61 days from Auburn football getting started in 2024. We're two months away. SEC Media Day starts in 2 weeks from today. If that doesn't get you excited, then I got nothing for you then, I guess, because SEC Media Days is the unofficial kickoff to the college football season. And college football, college sports is what a lot we're talking about today, because it is July 1, and there were so many things that happened today that we need to talk about. We're doing all of that for you on the show here today. And joining me, no Uncle T-Bone this week. He'll be back next week. We'll get your favorite crazy uncle back in the studio. But while he's out and while he's away, having a guy that's been on here a few times, and you will hear him periodically throughout the rest of the summer and into football season, Christian Griffin joining me in the studio on ESPN 106.7. What's up, man? Great to have you in here once again.
It is. It's a great time to be here. We got a lot of sports to talk about Now that we've hit July 1st, and respectably on a Monday, kind of seems to kick off the week, kick off the month. It feels like your weekend was a little bit,
oh my goodness,
a little bit more adventurous than a bunch of these schools had.
Yeah, look, the bachelor trip itself was great. All right, it was fantastic. We all went up, had a group of guys, had a fantastic house. Whoever scheduled and found that and booked that, he's a genius. It was a really good place. And we went to a casino with a big sports book, and we were a sports bar, I should say, and went and watched the UFC fights on Saturday night. So we had a really good time. And then we decided we wanted to come home, right? We decided, all right, let's get home. We got to get out of here. Some of us got to get back to our daily lives and get back to work and such. And we were flying out of Cincinnati. And I say we, I'll allude to who that is in just a second. We were flying out of Cincinnati. I was going just straight back to Atlanta, right? Direct flight. All right, cool. No problem. Get to Atlanta at like 6 o'clock, right? Buddy of mine that was coming back with us was taking a route through Charlotte. Well, that was a terrible idea. Terrible idea, because Charlotte decided just to have horrible weather, and the airport basically shut down. And so to keep this kind of clean for you, there were flights delayed from 5:45 from the original flight time, and this man did not leave Charlotte, North Carolina until about 8:30 this morning. and I got to sit and wait on him in the Atlanta airport for, I think, 16 hours between 6 o'clock last night until about 10 a.m. this morning when we finally left. And I don't know what it is, but, man, airports have done a really, really good job at making it the most uncomfortable place to sit in for long periods of time. Like, the seats are terrible, the floors are hard, I mean, there's just nothing. You can't find an outlet anywhere, all the restaurants closed, ain't nothing. I mean, it's a miserable experience. And if you've never been to the Atlanta airport at 4:30 in the morning and wonder what it looks like, it's a ghost town. There ain't nothing going on at the airport at 4:30 in the morning. So, all of that to say this, we got another guy in the studio, and former summer intern Graham is down here with us from Ohio. Good friend of mine, good buddy of mine, who was with us this weekend. He flew back, and so he is the reason that I'm running on precisely an hour and a half of sleep in the last 2 days. So bear with me on the show today. I brought in backups, Christian, just in case, because there is a lot to talk about. So that's how my weekend went, and that's how today went. We drove in, got back from Atlanta around noon today, and here we are. But we're here for the show. We're excited for the show. So much to get to, and as it is July 1, it is Conference Realignment Day across the country. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts today. 334-321-1390. That's the number to call in, be a part of the show. You can also text us in the On the Line text box, 334-784-1067. Conference Realignment Day, the big one, of course, right here in the Southeastern Conference. Texas and Oklahoma have officially become members of the Southeastern Conference. Both of those schools did big kickoff events. Texas really went and outdid themselves on a big kickoff event. We're going to get into all of that and what it means and things like that. But, Christian, this is a big day. I mean, this is a big day. You have radio hosts across this state that are saying it's the biggest, most monumental day in the history of the Southeastern Conference.
I wouldn't doubt it. And you might not even say just the Southeastern Conference. You could say in college football in general, I feel like, just because of how many teams have made that jump to different conferences. I mean, the Pac-12 is now the Pac-2 for this upcoming year.
RIP.
I mean, so many different schools. We can sit here and go down through every single one of them if we're really wanting to. The ACC, Cal, SMU, and Stanford Yay. Have now joined the ACC. Oregon, UCLA, USC, and Washington have all joined the Big Ten. We have Arizona, Arizona State, Colorado, and Utah now in the Big 12.
I feel like that one's forgotten about.
That is very much the one. If there's one that gets forgotten, it is teams like Utah, Colorado, and especially because, again, you kind of get lost in the middle there. You're used to the Pac-12 late at nights, but those teams right there. Pac-12, again, as I mentioned now, the good old Pac-2.
The Pac-2.
Or the Tupac, whichever of those you want to say. And then, obviously, again, the big one, Oklahoma and Texas in the SEC. Army joins the AAC, which is another really big one that I'm sure a bunch of people are really
interested
about.
That's what they were
about.
Tuned in. I mean, we have a full 30-minute segment on Army coming up later in the show, so stick around for that.
Yeah, and then Kennesaw State joins the Conference USA, making their jump from Division II ball to play now in the FBS. But, I mean, again, what a giant day for the entire landscape of college football, but especially within the SEC. You were talking about how big the parties were. Texas had Pitbull last night for a concert just because they can.
The SEC Network was there. I mean, they did a whole – I mean, it was a legitimate kickoff party
last night. There were drone light shows and everything. It was wild.
Which, I mean, you know what? Good for them. I mean, good for Texas because this is a big deal, right? We keep looking at this from – we continue to look at this from the SEC angle. We look at it from the Auburn perspective or the Alabama perspective. It's like, oh, yeah, cool. Fresh blood, new meat, right? Texas, Oklahoma coming to the SEC. We're going to show them. But let's flip this over for a second. Let's look at this from the Texas and Oklahoma side of things, where you've got two elite top 25 college football programs in the history of the sport that have been competing in the Big 12, which has been good for a long time. But there have been years, I think about the BCS years at times, early years of the playoff and beyond, where playing in the Big 12 has hurt teams like Texas and Oklahoma 100%. Because of how bad the conference has been at times when teams like Kansas were bottom feeders in FBS football, not just in the Big 12, right? When Iowa State is not worth anything. When those types of teams, when Texas Tech doesn't have a good quarterback, right? When Texas is going out there, in Oklahoma for that matter, and beating them by 21 points or more. They've gotten hurt, and they have been held back at times, not often, but enough times for them to say, you know what? We don't need to be in the Big 12 anymore. Not only is there more money, don't lose sight of that now. Don't lose sight of why they're really doing this. The money is making them do it. But I think this is such a big deal for Texas and Oklahoma to now become a part of the most prestigious conference in all of college athletics. In particular, since we are 2 months away in the college football landscape. I mean, Texas sells itself. Texas is always going to be what it is with their logo, their money, their state. But I think this, and we could have a discussion about this, I think this is a bigger move for Oklahoma than it is for Texas just because of what they're gaining and how much more they are going to get from the SEC than what Oklahoma was getting from the Big 12.
I would 100% agree with you. I've talked about it with a couple buddies of mine from the area, knowing that we both do Lee Scott games and things like that, saying that, you know, it was time like it was for Lee Scott to make that jump.
Yeah.
Same thing with Texas and Oklahoma. It felt like it was time because, again, you've had the years where that conference has been really strong and you've had a couple 8-4, 9-3 teams, but there's just nothing like when you're comparing it with the SEC where you feel like it's the gauntlet week in and week out, and there's teams that could go 9-3 that would go 12-0 in any other conference, but they're just sitting there beating up on each other. And going back to how big the move is, I would agree with you. I think it's just as big, if not an even bigger move for Oklahoma, and even more so in their big three sports. I feel like OU is dominant in the sports that we don't necessarily highlight on the ESPN shows, like the women's softball. I mean, that's what, the four-peat now?
Yeah.
And where they beat Texas in the College World Series.
Yeah.
So I think it's sports like that that have already found their groove, and they're going to continue to keep on rolling. But OU football in a couple years, Texas obviously is going to keep doing what they're doing. But teams like that, their football team, their baseball team, their basketball team, is only going to continue to grow once they have that SEC patch on their chest.
And Oklahoma obviously believes in what they're doing in terms of the future of their football program. They just gave Brent Venables a big contract extension. So, I mean, they obviously believe in what they're doing, and they believe that the SEC is going to make them better. I personally think that Oklahoma is going to be humbled when they step into the Southeastern Conference. I think they're going to be a middle-of-the-pack team their first few years. I really do. I think they're going to struggle to go 8-4, and those guaranteed 9-win seasons that Oklahoma's been so accustomed to in the last decade, don't expect that coming into this conference. I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm saying if you're a Sooners fan, do not expect that, especially with the schedule that the SEC gave them.
Well, it's also, you think back to 2012 with A&M and Missouri making that jump and how that was at the time highlighted as the greatest jump that college football has ever seen. And it's taken Missouri, other than that first year where Auburn beat them in the SEC championship, how long has it been since Missouri football has won 9-10 games? Obviously, they did this past year. Texas A&M has been Texas A&M.
Somebody dropped some crazy stat the other day. I think it was Chris Gordy who said A&M has not won a men's national championship in one of the major sports since like the 40s.
Gosh.
I don't know if that's 100% accurate. Definitely fact check me on that, but it's something ridiculous. And I'm glad you bring that up because that's the last major addition that we saw to this conference was Texas A&M and Missouri. And at that time, If the way that I remember it is, everybody was really excited about Texas A&M. That was a big get. That's a big time school that you bring to the SEC. You bring the fan base. You bring the money. You bring the passion. Like it just looks like an SEC school. Missouri, on the other hand, was the one that everybody was kind of scratching their heads. It was like, okay, in all honesty, it was, what are we doing? What are we doing with bringing in Missouri to the SEC? And while they have not won anything of relevance, in my opinion, they haven't brought down the league for the most part. No. They've just been kind of there, right? They're not the Vanderbilts of the world where it's like, okay, this is kind of a joke. But with Texas and Oklahoma, man, everybody's excited about both of these schools, and vice versa, these schools are excited to be a part of the SEC. We were alluding to it a little bit earlier. Texas, I mean, like I said, they had the SEC Network. They had Pitbull. They had drone light shows. I mean, they had the whole shebang going on there in Austin because they're so excited for this new era of Texas athletics. And both programs did a really good job of making these elaborate hype videos and, I mean, like multiple minutes long and just excited for the new era, new tradition. Like, it just makes sense. Like, this one just makes sense. Texas A&M, Missouri, you know, it kind of worked. It was okay. People were basically like, all right, well, we'll make it work.
Right.
Everybody knows that Texas and Oklahoma and the SEC, that is going to work.
Yeah, well, it's just everything that they bring. I mean, even just the Red River rivalry in itself. I was fortunate enough to attend that in the stands this past year.
And how was that?
My first experience. It was absolutely amazing. It's really hard to draw a full-on comparison because I have so many people ask me, well, you know, how was that compared to the Iron Bowl? Mm-hmm. Well, Iron Bowl is home and home. You're home one year, you're away the next. That was my first, other than, you know, bowl games, but even them, even those aren't true 50-50 mm-hmm. games, but being in a football stadium, open air, where it is half Texas and half Oklahoma, to where every single play, somebody is cheering.
That's awesome.
It was a really, really cool environment. And again, this is not even including the fair, because that's half the reason people go. But just the game in itself is going to bring so much positive publicity to not only these two schools, because you know the SEC is going to make that huge jump. They are loving being able to host that and being able to be a part of that. But just from the standpoint of those two brands, it is going to bring so much media attention to the SEC.
Well, you add that rivalry to the Iron Bowl. You add it to Auburn, Georgia. You add it to Alabama, LSU.
Yeah.
You add it to Georgia, Florida. Like, you add it to some really historic rivalries in college football. And no, it has not historically been an SEC rivalry, but you and I were kind of having this discussion before the show about, you know, does this now become an SEC rivalry? Do you claim the past games? I don't think so. I don't think you can claim the past games of Texas, Oklahoma, or whoever, but I think moving forward you do. Absolutely. You obviously claim them now. It is now an SEC rivalry. Last year, no, that was when they played in the Big 12. But this is now one of the best rivalries in the SEC. I still think it's behind the Iron Bowl. I still think it could be behind a couple of others. But I do think it's one of the best in college football, and now it's going to be played with the SEC logo on their jerseys and on the field as Texas and Oklahoma officially a part of the SEC today. More conference realignment things going on as well. More conversations on that, plus best and worst from the weekend. We'll have that coming up for you next here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com, or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
Back inside the studio here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Appreciate you being with us as you are getting your week started. Hopefully it's a short week for you as we are approaching rapidly the 4th of July, which is on Thursday, by the way, in case you haven't looked at your calendars yet. 4th of July is Thursday. A lot of people off on Friday. Some people off on Wednesday as well. That is the case for us. No On the Line Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, so keep that in mind. As we get in on this Monday, we've been talking a lot of Texas, Oklahoma. We'll talk some more about that as we go today. That is the big news. You also have, Christian, you mentioned this earlier, you have SMU, Cal, and Stanford moving to the ACC, and we can get back into the geographically challenged conversation that is, because that just doesn't make any sense. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen, the fact that you're going to have Stanford and Cal fly and play NC State, Clemson, Florida State.
For a Wednesday night women's basketball game.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Thursday night volleyball.
Yeah.
Where then they turn around and play on Sunday afternoon. Like, soccer, same way. It's like, I don't know. And I've said this before on this program. I think what they're going to have to do, they're going to have to do block scheduling to where when the Stanford women's soccer team or whatever it is, Stanford baseball or Cal, whatever the case may be, women's basketball, right? When they make a road trip to the other side of the country, they're just going to have to stay for a week or two and just be like, look.
Just bounce off each school, play every single one of them on their way down?
Yeah, I mean, because if you don't, man, you're going to be flying all over the place. Because think about a normal, you know, basketball schedule where you play a Tuesday or Wednesday night on the road, but then you come back and play that Saturday at home. But then you could very easily be right back on the road somewhere on Tuesday. And so you're not going to set it up to where you play in California, then North Carolina, and back to California in a four-day period. That's miserable, right? So I'm curious on how they're going to do that in the future, how they're going to do that moving forward. And I know that this is a lost cause, and it's unfortunate that we have to continue to come out and state this, but these are student athletes. Like, they do have classes to go to. I mean, they do have, you know, assignments and tests and projects and things like that. And so how do you expect some student in the middle of January to keep up with five or six classes when they're flying all over the country and they're living out of a suitcase on an airplane? You know what I mean? Like, that's where that's all going to get murky. And the Big Ten's doing the same thing. You're going to have Washington and Oregon playing in Rutgers and Wisconsin. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but I digress. I know we got a few seconds here. Let's get into this. We can carry this into the next segment too, Christian. Best and worst from the weekend. There was a lot of sports going on this weekend. You had golf. You had UFC. You've got NBA free agency that's wide open right now. What'd you see? Best and worst from this weekend?
I think the best one is, it was what I have for my worst, which is ironic because it was the best turned into the worst. But the Wyatt Langford cycle last night, the first ever on Sunday Night Baseball history since it became Sunday Night Baseball, and the first Rangers rookie since 1985 to hit for the cycle. Now, granted, a little comical because the MLB kind of makes a fool out of themselves because they have the statistics of, you know, first player that lived with their grandmas until they were 37 that hit a home run.
They'll stretch that out. 28. You better believe it.
Something like that. So you have all of those statistics. But again, it's just pretty cool because Sunday Night Baseball is such a tradition, especially this time of year, for that Sunday night game, that 6 p.m. Central Time slot every single Sunday on ESPN. To think that there's never been a cycle, I feel like, is a pretty cool one. And for it be a former SEC player and a rookie to take home that award.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And look, and I like the cycle. I think it's a unique thing. It's something in baseball where you just don't see it happen a ton. And it's one of those things where I see it and it's like, oh, that's pretty cool. Or if you get the notification nowadays where it's like, oh, so-and-so's a double away from hitting the cycle. It's like, okay, I'll tune in. I'll keep up. And then I'll cheer for it, right?
Yeah.
And then it happens. You're like, all right, cool. That's pretty sweet.
Then 2 years from now.
And then I kind of move on. I'm going to be honest. I mean, you don't really go back and hit, like, a year from now, we're not going to come back and be like, remember when that guy hit a cycle on Sunday Night Baseball? Pretty awesome. Like, it's a great thing, and it's something that none of us could ever do, but I just feel like it doesn't get the love, and I'm guilty of that. I'm admitting it right here. I feel like it doesn't get the love that it deserves because you're a former college baseball player. Yeah. That's a tough task, man, hitting for a cycle and doing it at the highest level, man. That's some serious business.
It really is, and again, yeah, it definitely gets thrown by the wayside just because, you know, there are, it feels like, six or seven guys that hit it for every single year. But I just, again, being a baseball player, being a hitter, you're realizing how insanely tough that is. And you see it so many times. Wyatt actually had it not as hard as some of the other guys because you feel like the home run, the single, and the double are the easiest. And then you see so many times them have to, you know, hit one in the gap and actually try and turn on the burners and hit the triple. Yeah. He actually went double, triple, single, only had the home run left and hit a three-run homer in the top of the seventh inning. So a pretty cool way that you get the slow jog to finish off that cycle.
Yeah, best thing I saw quickly before the music kicks us out of here. How about Alex Pereira this weekend in the UFC? Massive head kick and just dominated in the main event for UFC 303. Was a great card. It was moving around. How about the dude that stepped in on a few hours' notice?
Yeah, an hour and a half.
Yeah. Hopped off his couch and said, put me in. I got you, Dana White. Stepped in and, hey, guy fought a heck of a fight, too. Unbelievable. Great card this weekend for UFC. We'll talk some more about that coming up in hour number two. We have some Auburn football recruiting news that we got to get to when we come back here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
On the Line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Monday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. I got Christian Griffin with me in the studio. No Uncle T-Bone. He will be back next week after the holiday. But Christian joining us in the studio. He's with me periodically, time for time. And we're talking a lot of things. And I want to get into Auburn football in terms of recruiting because it is still the dead period, right? You still have until July 24th for the dead period to end, which means you don't have coaches talking to kids, you don't have kids coming to campus, there's nothing going on there. A lot of people on vacation doing all that type of thing. But you still have news of players committing to places and players decommitting from places. And this happened late last week, and we were not on the air to talk about it, so I want to bring it up here today because it seems to be a growing concern for Auburn fans here over the last couple of weeks because there were tons of commits and big news and storylines in terms of Auburn football recruiting. It seemed like there for a minute, Christian, Hugh Freeze and company could do no wrong. They were a top five class. They landed everybody they were going after, getting surprise commits in early April and in the spring, right? But the last couple of weeks have kind of been flipped on its head in terms of it's just been the opposite. And another one is the four-star linebacker Tyler Lockhart decommitting from Auburn late last week. Has seemed to be a pretty heavy Mississippi State lean here. Doesn't mean Auburn's out of it, but this is just another loss that Auburn has in terms of a decommitment in that 2025 class, which is backing up what I was talking about where, yeah, you had 2 or 3 weeks where, man, Auburn couldn't miss. And now here we are, it seems like the exact opposite.
It does. And as much as you want to get frustrated, when you're looking at the rankings, you're sitting in 11th right now, which all things considered, you're looking a couple years ago, 11th is a little bit better than 43rd or 76th, which is crazy to even think about. But
yeah, some wild numbers.
The words commitment and decommitment are almost used on our landscape of announcing with unbelievable, with an unbelievable catch. No, it was a good catch.
Yeah.
But the word
but I do believe that it could happen.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But the words commitment and decommitment are blown out of proportion for so many reasons. It means absolutely nothing.
So you believe that it's meaningless. A commitment right now is meaningless.
Yes, 100%. Because not only do you not have to say anything about why you committed or why you decommitted, you can commit or decommit as many times as you like, which I would love to see the NCAA do something along those lines of almost make it to where you have one. Mm-hmm. Just like where you sign, unless something happens and you have to get out of your signing, you have one commitment and one decommitment that you're allowed to make because you're seeing guys that commit their sophomore year, decommit their junior year, commit 2 months later, decommit, commit their senior year, decommit, and then go back and sign with their school that they signed with or they committed to their sophomore year. And I know you were talking about it over the break that Uncle T-Bone's on the heater right now talking about how there's schools that are paying guys to commit simply from the standpoint.
He's been on that for a while, yeah.
Right, and it's hard to disagree because you're sitting there talking about, again, Juju Lewis, for example, the guy that is arguably the biggest name floating around Auburn right now. But whenever you use his name, what has to go in front of it?
USC
the
commit.
USC commit.
That's right.
Julian Lewis.
Yeah, that's right.
And so if you're getting people like that to make that early commit, it's not only getting leverage for the other guys, but going back to my point, Julian Lewis committed. Okay, well, then why do we have a chance at getting him?
And he's been at Auburn a double-digit times
since
he committed to USC.
And this one worked in our favor, but Alvin Henderson, 3 days before flipping to Auburn, talked about how he was 1,000% committed to Penn State. Now, I don't think anybody truly believed that, but just going back to it of he felt like an Auburn lock the entire way. Then all of a sudden you make the Penn State's commitment. What a word that is, again.
Yeah.
And now you're back signed, or committed, sorry, committed with Auburn to where again, those words just mean absolutely nothing in today's day and age.
And you know, I have to add here too that the period in the calendar, right, where you are in the recruiting calendar, I think is really important with this commitment conversation, and whether getting a commit from somebody or losing a commitment from somebody is really that big of a deal. I think I was talking about this late last week on the show where, look, we're always going to get excited. I think Tebow was with me about this. We were always are going to get excited on this program and in this town, and this fan base is always going to be excited, and Alabama will too, about when you get a big commit, when that four-star linebacker commit, when the Tyler Lockharts of the world commit to Auburn or Alabama. Like, that's a big deal. And you're always going to maybe oversell it a little bit, right? Especially in what we do, just because we're excited about it. And you want to look at the highest possible outcome for that individual player and what they could bring to your program in the future, right? But it's also okay to be upset when that player decommits, all right? You can't have your cake and eat it too, right? You have to be able to celebrate when they commit and also understand, like, ouch, that hurt. Tyler Lockhart hurts. That's a tough one to lose. A four-star linebacker that's been committed to Auburn since early April, which I want to get to in a second. Like, it's okay to be like, that one stings, rather than what a lot of fans do. And I'm not saying Auburn fans in particular. I think most sports fans are like this, but you celebrate him when he's yours, and then you write him off when he's gone, yeah, right? It's just, oh, yeah, well,
wouldn't have played.
Yeah, we didn't want him anyway, right? Yeah. He's not even that good. Well, we can do better. We'll replace him. You know, I hate that mentality. I really do. And the reason I hate it is because recruits see that.
That's what I was about to say, the exact same
thing.
They see it. And imagine if you decommit, but it's not one of those decommit, I'm closing the door on you. It's still very much Lockhart leaning towards Mississippi State, being one of those guys, but Auburn's still very much in the conversation. But then all of a sudden, if you're seeing that fan base immediately turn their shoulder, you know, throw you to the curb and just have the mentality of,
yeah, we didn't want you.
We didn't want you. You weren't going to play anyway.
Then why would you want to go there?
Exactly.
And, you know, this type of situation, too, is more popular than it's ever been before, which is getting us back to how much weight does a commitment really carry? And I get back to, where are you in the calendar? I think we have been proven, Lockhart, for example, Alvin Henderson, for example, so many other players across the country, a commitment in early April doesn't really mean a whole lot, which is kind of what you were getting to, Christian. It just doesn't carry a whole lot of weight because there's so much time and there's so many things that can happen between April and December when 90% of these kids are going to sit down and sign their NLI, the National Letter of Intent. That's months. That's over half a year for this thing to change. And playing time changes, NIL changes, coaching changes. Like, there's all of these things that take place. And I've talked about this. A lot of these kids, football, basketball is really getting into this too, where they are wanting to be done and committed before their senior season, and they don't want to take any more visits. So I think once you get into the fall, once you have some hard commits going into September, I think you probably feel pretty good. Now, all that can change with a random phone call overnight, right? Hey, we actually just found a little bit more money for you, my man. Would you like to come play for us? You know, like, that can still happen, but it just depends on where you are in the calendar. If you get a commit, great. If he decommits, okay. And I think Auburn and Hugh Freeze have proven, okay, you decommitted. That's okay. We understand, but we're not going to give up on you. Auburn has done that since the start. Even when they've lost the outright commitment, Alvin Henderson, for example, they never stop recruiting him. They always stay on him until the pen hits the paper. And that's what it's going to take in this new era of not just college football, but of college athletics as well. And so what all sparked this was the decommitment of Tyler Lockhart, the four-star linebacker, late last week, and just what it means moving forward. Auburn still has a really good class. They still have a ton of guys on the board that they're going for. And you now have Big Cat Weekend coming up at the end of this month.
And I think that's the biggest thing that everybody's looking forward to. That's the time when Auburn really wants to make their moves, is in Big Cat.
Sure.
Making a final point off of what you were talking about with these recruiting periods and the signing periods. The college football playoff national championship this year is Monday, January 20th. National signing day is February 5th.
Ugh.
That is...
It's terrible.
I mean, 16 days, if I'm doing my math correctly, on when teams are arguably trying to play for a national championship and then kids have to commit or sign their NLI. And I just feel like that time period is so crammed to where there is so much that can and does go wrong with things like that, that just it just does not make sense with the whole aspect of the recruiting period.
Yeah, well, luckily, as I said, luckily, I mean, you're looking at 90%, if not more, are signing and being done in that December period. The quote, early signing day, which has become the impromptu signing day. That's just what it's become. But that gets into what coaches like Hugh Freeze and others have continued to, I don't want to say complain, but borderline complain, because the calendar is just so messed up. The calendar is so off. And the fact that you are hard recruiting through the back end of June almost, you get, what, a couple of weeks in July, and then your massive recruiting weekend, and then boom, football season's here. Fall practice starts, you're hosting kids every day, you're hosting kids every weekend. Like, it runs nonstop. It's truly all year long. And that's where Auburn is trying to gain the most ground, is just outworking people is what they're having to do right now. And so that's what makes it a little more painful. That's what hurts when you see guys like Tyler Lockhart decommit, because Auburn was in on him. Auburn had the commitment of him, and Auburn felt really good about him. But Auburn, as of right now, and I'm looking at 247, our friends over there at Auburn Undercover, 14 commits right now. 9 of those are 4 stars, 5 of those 3 stars. They have Auburn at 13th in their 247 rankings. You can look at On3, you can look at Rivals, doesn't really matter. They're all going to be about the same. And so Auburn has dropped a little bit, and we were talking about this late last week, CG, but Alabama has really turned it on. And for a class that wasn't looking just superior as we always have seen it, they've made a heck of a jump in the last couple of weeks. And look, they've got some really good players over there. It's not a bunch of fluff. They've picked up some dudes.
They have, and it's the hard reality, because you want to point fingers and laugh and joke. Kalen DeBoer is going to be a heck of a coach. He already is a heck of a coach. People forget that this man coached in the national championship this past year. And so, yes, he doesn't have the persona and the stature, and obviously with the change, it makes it a little bit more difficult. Mm-hmm. But he obviously has success in what he does. And so by no means when he makes that jump is it just going to, dang it, I made the jump to a different school, which for him he sees as a elevated jump, or else he wouldn't have taken the job.
Yeah.
To where you're going to see weeks in months where things like this happen, you're going to see and continue to see those big name signees continue to go there.
Yeah, they have 20 commits right now, does Alabama. 2 of those being 5 stars, 14 are 4 stars, 3 of those being 3 stars up in Tuscaloosa. Here's what I'll say to Auburn fans before we get to break. Auburn is nowhere near done, okay? They're a top 15 class now. Hugh Freeze is aiming for top 5. He came into 2024 and took over that disaster and said, I wanted to be top 10. All right, well, he got that. He did that. He got a top 10 class. And I think you're going to see that on the field this fall. You now, and he's been very open about this, he wants this to be a top 5 class. And guess what? It still has every potential to be that. It has every potential, and I don't, there's another word there, I can't think of it, but like, it has all the possibility in the world to be a top 5 class. Like, it has every chance to be a top 5 class. A lot of work to do, a lot of wins you got to get, and there's going to be some flips you got to get in there as well. But if anybody can do it, I think Hugh Freeze has proven he's the guy to do it, because, again, he never gives up. He never stops recruiting, and that's what you have to have in today's college football world, the thing that the previous two coaches just didn't have here at Auburn.
No, and that's what you hear so many of the commits that are committing and signing.
Yeah.
Alvin Henderson said it the most recently, that he talked to Freeze and their staff almost every single day. He continues to build the relationships to where, obviously, yes, it's so that you come and play for Auburn, but it's, I mean, just trying to keep everything open, keep every single one of your options open. And going back to it, if you're aiming for a top 5 class, say you fall to 6th, 7th, or 8th, Think 3 or 4 years ago, I go back to it, to where you're sitting 43rd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the looking at the big, in the grand scheme of things, if you still get the 6th, 7th, or 8th ranked class, even if you aren't getting that top 5 that you were planning for, you're still going to have a heck of a class and absolutely zero room to complain.
Here's the problem, though, and this is no secret. This is not breaking news by any means. I'm going to use the top 16 because it helps make my argument here. Top 16. Are you ready for this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8.
Including today?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Including today, of Texas and Oklahoma. Right. Yeah. You have, the SEC has 8 of the top 16. You have half of the top 16 recruiting classes as of right now, according to 247. So, yeah, you can be top 10, but guess what top 10 gets you? That
7th.
Gets you 8. Yeah, it gets you 6th or 7th in the SEC. And we know how that goes. Now, with the expanded college football playoff, yes, there's more room for error, yada, yada, yada. But that's why Freeze is so adamant about a top 5 class. Because guess what? Top 5 class gets you in the top 3 of the SEC. That's where it gets you. And that's where you're competing, not just to win SEC championships, but that is how you compete for national championships, which is what Hugh Freeze wants to do. And they've got a lot of work to do in that 2025 class. It's still looking good, and there's a lot of possibilities there as well. We'll keep you updated as we go throughout the rest of July. Dead period will be done on July 24th. Really excited for Big Cat Weekend coming up in a few weeks as well. So we'll be sure to keep you in the loop on all of that. We'll take our final break here in hour number one, come back and wrap it up here on ESPN 106.7.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Wrapping up the first hour here on the Monday edition of On the Line, getting the week started, getting the month started. How about that? July 1. Unbelievable, man. Time is flying by. And while it is the dog days of summer, there's still so much going on. And we were having a lot of fun talking recruiting in that last segment, talking about Auburn losing a commit, Tyler Lockhart, the linebacker who is a four-star. And we were really getting into, again, the conversation of how many players are committing and decommitting through April, May, and now June. And there's so many factors here on what causes a player to commit to a school early or decommit from a school or then recommit or, heck, go somewhere completely different. Like, there's so many factors. And I'll say this too. Everybody on the internet, they know. They know why that player decommitted. Oh, yeah, I know why. I know why you, yeah, we didn't want you anyway. Like, just stop. Just stop. Because I say this all the time, and I'll say it till I'm blue in the face and when I'm dead. Nobody knows anything. The quicker you accept that, the better off you're going to be in this world, sports-wise, because everybody claims to know that they know everything. But in reality, nobody really knows a whole lot. That's kind of what I subscribe to. But we've got Graham with us, who, if you're a longtime listener of the show, you know Graham from a summer ago, was our intern running the board. He's back in town for a couple of days and was able to get back behind the board. So he's producing the show today. If you call in 334-321-1390 or give us a text in the on-the-line text box, 334-784-1067. You're a college athlete and now getting into coaching as well. You had a thought on the whole recruiting conversation, huh?
Really, to make it simple, people are greedy and money talks. So
of this show.
I've kind of seen a lot of times, once you commit somewhere, you're supposed to kind of be closed down, right? That's kind of like, okay, that's where I've chosen. But
in the past, that's what a commitment is.
But
right?
People aren't doing that. So a lot of times, and I think Christian kind of pointed that out over the break while we were talking, is like once you commit somewhere, it makes other schools try harder sometimes. So then they'll up their offer, they'll match that, they'll give extra. So things like that, a lot of times people commit early because in the long run, it could be more beneficial for them and the money they get and whatnot. So, but then it just makes it annoying because it makes a commitment mean nothing.
Right. And so at what point, that's a really good point, because at what point, right, do other schools kind of see through that? I mean, at what point do they're like, All right, well, that's a fake commit. He's not really going to go to Penn State or wherever. I mean, now you're getting into some serious politics and
playing
drama.
Poker with commitments almost. I'm calling your bluff.
Yeah, like, literally. It's like, all right, let's see your poker face. Let's see what you got. And all right, put them on the table. Let's go. Let's see what you got. Yeah, crazy. Recruiting has become a poker game. How about that?
We're all in.
Yeah, all in with all $20. Here we go. All right, hour number one is in the book. Stay tuned. We're talking more recruiting, more Texas, Oklahoma, and more Auburn athletics all coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line. Live on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader. Online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app. To be on the line, call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. You are on the line with Jacob Goins.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika sports leader. Happy Monday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two on the Monday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. I'm your man, Jacob Goins, with you. If you missed any of hour number one, flew by. It really did. We had a lot of fun in that first hour. Be sure you go and catch up with the podcast. You can find that after the show today. Easiest and best way to find it is our station website, ESPNAU.com. That's where you'll find everything. You can listen to the show live there every day. You can find the podcast there every day. And really, that's just the place to be for everything that we do here at ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com. We talked about Texas and Oklahoma and conference realignment. All of that became official today. Had a lot of fun conversation there. More on that coming up in just a few minutes. Also, we talked a lot of recruiting and Auburn football as they lose, or I guess they see a decommitment. I guess you don't gain a decommitment, right? You get or learn about a decommitment late last week. And so talked about that and just where recruiting is heading for Auburn and how you kind of judge this a little bit and take all of this at a slower pace right now in terms of football recruiting. So that was all in hour number one. Talking more of Texas, Oklahoma, the SEC, going to have a fun hypothetical question here in just a second. We'll get back to best and worst from the weekend. And then Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network. It's been wild trying to get this man on, but I think we're going to make it happen today. We're going to do our best to get Jacob Hillman back on the airwaves and talk about everything that's been happening in Auburn athletics and kind of what to expect moving forward as we are moving right along and into the summer. So that's what's coming up here in hour number two. Until Jacob Hillman joins us, though, you can be a part of the show two ways. You can call in 334-321-1390 and talk to us and be a part of the show that way, or you can submit your comments and questions to the On the Line text box, which is 334-784-1067. And want to remind you that hour two, each and every day here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7, is brought to you by our friends over at the Orthopedic Clinic. The Orthopedic Clinic is East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care with locations in Auburn and Opelika to better serve you. You can find them online at theorthoclinic.com. They bring you the second hour each and every day, 3 to 4, right here on the Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. So we appreciate them doing that over at the Orthopedic Clinic. Came up with this question, and we can change it up a little bit if we need to, but was just kind of shooting from the hip on this, and like I said, we can edit it, Christian, as Christian Griffin joining us in the studio today. We can tweak this up if we need to. But with Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC, and with the college football playoff being expanded now to 12 teams, we all believe that the SEC going to have numerous teams every year is what they should. That should be the expectation. Here's my question, and I leave this open to you, the listener, and to Christian. We're going to talk about this. Which duo of SEC teams will make the college football playoff first. The new look playoff. Both these teams have to make it for this question to count, all right? Which duo will make the college football playoff first together? Texas and Oklahoma, the newcomers, or two programs that I feel are due. I feel that are trying to get back to relevancy, that are trying to get to that playoff and reestablish themselves in the conference, Auburn and Texas A&M. Which duo is going to make the college football playoff first? Texas, Oklahoma, or Auburn and Texas A&M?
It's a great hypothetical or a great question. Good work. Good work.
That's peak. That's peak talking season, baby.
Yeah. It's really tough because when you're looking at those two teams on either side, you're guaranteeing one of them a loss every single year from the other team. Because it's not like you're conversating Auburn and Florida to where they don't play each other every year. Auburn and Texas A&M will play, and Texas, Oklahoma will play. So you're giving them one of those teams a loss every single year in divisionless SEC football now, or conference. Yeah, divisionless.
Divisionless.
There we
yeah.
go. SEC football is going to take the top two teams to play in the SEC championship, which a story for another day, I think will quickly turn into a non-existent game, but
it'll still be played.
It will, but you could very much see it with the third and fourth teams in the SEC playing it. But again, a conversation for another day.
Sure.
Man, you really like what you're seeing with Texas and Oklahoma football from the standpoint of what they have, Sark and Venables now mm-hmm. with a six-year agreement that we just talked about.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to look at it. If you take the SEC out of it for
right,
a second,
yeah,
take the conferences and just look at each football program individually right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you would think the obvious answer would be Texas and Oklahoma because you're dealing with Auburn in the second-year head coach. You're dealing with Mike Elko year one at Texas yeah. A&M, and who knows what the heck that's going to be, right? Versus, like you said, Sark at Texas, who's building a monster, and Venables, who Oklahoma obviously believes in. So that would be the obvious answer until you put the SEC back into the conversation, and the question becomes the thing that we're all wondering, right? How are Texas and Oklahoma going to do in this conference week in and week out? Because they're good and they're going to beat most teams that they play. But can Texas and Oklahoma get double-digit wins in the SEC, right? Look at that Oklahoma schedule. It's brutal. It's brutal. And next year's schedule is the same schedule as this year, just flipped. So you play the same opponents, you just play them in the opposite place. Like, that Oklahoma schedule is still difficult a year from now. Whereas Texas, we've said it numerous times, they got blessed by the SEC. And so, are you buying into Texas and Oklahoma making big jumps and making a playoff maybe this year, next year? Or are you buying into Hugh Freeze and Auburn maybe making it next year and Mike Elko just coming out of nowhere and making Texas A&M relevant again? And you can sub that team in for somebody else. I'm good with that too.
I think if you're trying to compare one of those two teams in each thing, by no means am I saying that Texas is up at the level that Auburn is trying, or Auburn's at the level of Texas right now, but I think in the conversation of this question, I think you group those two mm-hmm. together, and then you group Oklahoma and Texas A&M. Both of those schools, we were talking about it in the first hour. Oklahoma, as much as we feel like they have or are gaining more, I feel like they have much more to prove in these first couple years than Texas does coming into the SEC, because Texas is established. They have everything going for them. Again, Sarkisian and all of the recruits, all of their signees that they already have. And again, playing in the college football playoff this past year.
So you think Oklahoma has more to prove in the SEC?
If you're looking from the standpoint of a standard, mm-hmm. then maybe not necessarily, but I think if you look at the two programs coming into the SEC, I think more teams would tell you that they know, or more people would tell you they more know more about Texas than they do Oklahoma.
I think more people are more confident about Texas. I think that's fair. But I think Texas, because of that, That's my argument.
To hold up that standard.
Yeah, I think they have more to prove that way. And that's, again, this is just kind of going back and forth. But, yeah, and I think that's why. Because Texas is expected to be good.
Right.
Like, they're expected to be competing right away in this conference. And they very well could. I mean, look at the changing of the guard we've got going on. I mean, I think it's Georgia 1, Texas 2, is it not, going into the SEC this year? And so, I mean, that's pretty big for a team to be stepping into the best conference in college football and already being predicted to make the SEC championship game and be one of the top representatives in the college football playoff. On the flip side of Oklahoma, where, yeah, I mean, they wanted to be competitive, and people expect Oklahoma to be that. Oh, do I compare them to an Ole Miss where this, the new Ole Miss, not the Ole Miss of the past, the Lane Kiffin Ole Miss, where
the term of a dark horse almost.
Yeah, a dark horse and a dogfight.
Yeah.
That's what you're going to get. And I think that's what people are expecting of this Oklahoma program over the next decade or so in the SEC.
Looking ahead to later on this year, Texas and Texas A&M end the year playing each other on November 30th.
I love it.
In Kyle Field, which is, according to EA College Football 25, the toughest place to play in college football.
They also gave Colorado a top 10 offense in college football, which is
ridiculous. And I believe the 13th defense.
Oh,
yeah.
That's disgusting.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Which, hey, if we're on the topic, happy College Football 25 month. Since
it is release,
it is 16 days
until
the release date. So
forgot about that.
Yeah,
nice.
Speaking to our generation, our kind. But hey, 10 years ago is a long time since that game has come out, and that game better live up to the hype. Otherwise, that's coming with backlash. As well. But what a game that this is. Be you're bringing back the Texas A&M rivalry game, and what a way to figure out kind of where you are in the SEC, especially with Elko in year one, because it's not like they're playing week four or week five, kind of like Auburn and Oklahoma are this upcoming year, where both teams are still trying to figure some things out, but it's still going to be one of those games that you really, really look forward to. When you're playing game number 12, you can't necessarily go out and fix too many things. You're coming out there, and it's literally going to be the team that executes better, and it's a really good year one kind of size-up point for Texas A&M.
Yeah, and that's my concern, though, is where that game falls in the schedule for Texas A&M. Texas is going to be fine. I mean, their schedule is a cakewalk compared to a lot of the people in the SEC. But Texas A&M, right, they open with Notre Dame. They play at Florida week three to open up SEC play. Not that that's going to be a great Florida team, but it's still early in the year, so, you know, they'll still have confidence and actually want to be there. They also play the Arkansas game at neutral site. They're at Mississippi State. They host Missouri and LSU. They go to South Carolina. New Mexico State's in there. They come to Auburn, and then the very next week is when they host Texas. So A&M could have numerous losses on that schedule. But here's what's exciting. This is one of the old-school rivalries that's now coming back and is now a part of the SEC. That's one of those games where it doesn't matter.
No.
Doesn't matter. Both teams could be winless, and they're going to show up, and they're going to go crazy because you're digging up a rivalry that was buried for a long time, and you're digging it back up, and it's going to be special. But that's a game that, in this year, Texas should win. That could be a game that Texas is like, okay, you win and you're in. It could be that type of a situation for Sark and the Longhorns, where it comes down to November 30th. Let's say they have a single loss. It's like, okay, you win. Not only are you in, you could be a top four seed, depending on how college football plays out this year. So that's what Texas has riding on the line this year. And so to kind of give you my answer, I'm going to take Texas-Oklahoma.
I would agree.
I think it's the safer bet, sure, but I think it also just speaks to where those two programs, you brought it up, where those two programs are compared to Auburn and Texas A&M. I think there's a better chance, and if you're just now tuning in here in hour number two, question is, which duo of teams in the SEC makes the college football playoff first? They have to make it together, same year. Texas-Oklahoma or Auburn and Texas A&M. Let me ask you this then, since our answer was the same, we both picked Texas and Oklahoma. Is there another team other than Texas A&M that you could put in there that would be equal or near equal that would make you change your answer? Could you put an LSU in there? How about Auburn LSU? Do you think those two teams could make a college football playoff before Texas and Oklahoma do together?
I think if that goes back to the question of, because Auburn and LSU don't play each other this year, you're not guaranteeing one of those teams a loss. Mm-hmm. It helps the chances because, again, the Red River rivalry, Texas and OU will play each other every single year.
Until the world ends.
Right. And so something like that would possibly change the answer just because.
From a math standpoint.
Or think of it as Auburn-Ole Miss, where those two teams will not face each other this year.
For the first time in a long time.
Right, yeah. For both of those rivalries kind of going by the wayside. So I think that brings up a whole different argument. That being said, I don't think it changes the argument enough. It doesn't change the metaphorical betting odds that you are giving me from a minus sign to a plus sign. So I will still give my money to the dealer with Texas and Oklahoma.
See, I think LSU, I think that's enough to sway my answer.
Okay.
I think it's enough to sway my answer. I think that is very, very possible because let's look at it from this year in 2024. Texas is probably going to make the college football playoff. They should. That's the expectation. They should. They should make it. I think that's what they believe in, right? But nobody's expecting what?
I'll throw an asterisk on there. Hold on. Yeah.
Nobody's expecting Oklahoma, Auburn, LSU, or Texas A&M to make it to the college football playoff this year. But moving into next year for 2025, depending on how this year goes for Auburn, right? If Auburn goes 8-4, heck, 9-3, they continue to recruit. You're telling me if you get another top 10, heck, top 5 recruiting class and you keep the guys from this year on this roster and you get your quarterback of the future, whoever that may be, you're telling me that Auburn is not going to be a dark horse to make the college football playoff next season? I think that's a very high possibility. Tack that on to the top of what Brian Kelly's doing at LSU, where they continue to recruit at a high level that nobody's talking about. They have one of the best staffs in the country offensively and defensively, which nobody's talking about. And, oh yeah, Brian Kelly's a heck of a head coach, which nobody's talking about. And so give me Hugh Freeze and Brian Kelly at Auburn and LSU next year before Sark at Texas and Venables at Oklahoma make it next year. That's why I changed my answer. And Oklahoma seems very confident in Brent Venables. I think he's a great coach. But, yeah, I'll take Auburn and LSU to make it before Texas and Oklahoma.
All right, well, there we go. I liked how we could tweak the question to,
of course, always,
to make it because, again, I think if you're going Auburn, Texas, A&M, I think the clear answer is Texas, Oklahoma. We're talking about Texas being what you think is a for sure, or it should be.
I think it's the expectation in Austin. Yeah, I think it's the expectation.
So,
you got betting odds pulled up?
I do not, but okay. I'm looking at their schedule as a whole. Week 2, Texas is in Ann Arbor.
Love it.
Michigan. So
they should win that game.
They should, but what if this is
They're 10 points better than that Michigan
team. What if this is not the Texas team from last year, and Texas does one of the things that they do and kind of find a way to lose one or two of those easy games. They host Georgia as well.
God, I can't wait for that.
They go in Dallas to play Oklahoma. And then, I mean, heck, if we're throwing hypotheticals out there, what if all of a sudden something crazy happens and Texas and Texas A&M are playing each other on the last month of November and they're both sitting at 10-1?
I mean, yeah. Now, could you imagine?
Even if Texas A&M is 9-2, but it's one of those games to where
they're good
you're
enough.
Flirting with the second and third mm-hmm. spot in the SEC to where if you win, you make that argument.
Yeah, well, we got somebody texting in about this topic, and we're going to get to this question when we come back. Plus, we'll do best and worst from the weekend again. How many teams from the SEC make it this year, and who are they making it to the college football playoff?
I like it.
Which team? How many teams make it, and who is it this year in the expanded college football playoff? We'll talk about that, plus best and worst from the weekend before Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network joins us. That's all coming up here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7, online at ESPNAU.com or on the ESPN 106.7 app.
A listener prompted question of the day, and it goes along with our, I guess, preemptive question. I mean, we had a question of the day going, kind of, and we tweaked it a little bit, having a little fun with the news of Texas and Oklahoma officially joining the SEC as of today. I was looking ESPN.com and SEC.com, like, Texas and Oklahoma officially listed under Southeastern Conference and everything. And I know that sounds crazy. It sounds like, well, duh, but, I mean, it's a big day, man. That's a big day to see two brand-new teams added to the conference. And we got a text in our on-the-line text box. We'd love to hear from you there, 334-784-1067. We were getting into college football playoff discussions and what the SEC can do and will do this year. And the question is, how many teams from the SEC make it this year to the college football playoff, and who are they? First of all, let's start with how many, and then we'll get down to who it is. So, Christian, your thoughts on how many teams can and will make the college football playoff from the Southeastern Conference?
I think you take it from a – you're almost a limit, like an elimination-type game to where, again, there's four guaranteed conference winners and then the group of five winners. So that's mm-hmm. five teams. So take the SEC. So, comically, at most, what, eight SEC teams could possibly get in? I think you're going to see teams like Ohio State and Oregon get in, so that takes off two from the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you could Clemson with the ACC. You could throw Florida State in there, so where there's two of those teams getting in.
I mean, is Clemson really going to make it anymore? I mean, I think Dabo's kind of on the backspin here. You know,
we'll see. I think
that was for our general manager Steve Wood. I know he's out there somewhere.
I think if we're starting with could be, or how many could we have, is that was the question you were asking first?
Yeah. How many can? Like, yes, you could say, oh, hypothetically, but
talking how many can get in?
Yeah. Realistically.
I think there's four SEC teams that have a legitimate shot this year.
Okay.
That being Georgia, mm-hmm. Texas, Ole Miss, if everything goes right, and then the asterisk of Alabama. I think those are the four teams that have the, at least are not favored, but have the highest chances. Again, you could throw a couple teams in there that would give you that dark horse run. But if you're looking at the SEC as a whole, I think those four teams are looking at the favorites. I don't think, and this could, I mean, it's one of those until they prove me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Ole Miss is going to get over that hump. Again, playing, they host Georgia, which is one of those games we talked about during the break. Ole Miss could go in undefeated and lose 49-7, and I don't think we'd sit there and go, oh my gosh. It would be more so just, oh, yeah, well, that's
about right.
Kirby does what Kirby
yeah,
does.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to say two this year.
Two?
I think.
Wow.
I think that because it's the very first year of the expanded playoff, they do not want to start it off with the quote-unquote SEC bias. So I think that you could legitimately, I think that it will be Georgia and Texas. I think that those will be the two teams. There's going to be close thirds, but again, I think with the conference realignments, there's too many other good teams, at least in year one, that have the hype. Now, those all have to fall under suit and play out to where they're expecting, but mm-hmm. teams like in Oregon that you forget are now playing in the Big Ten. I would expect them and Ohio State to get in. I think a team like Memphis is going to be the group of five team that gets in. So all of a sudden, I mean, that right there is five teams that are marking everything out. And so I think two is the answer for me. I wouldn't be shocked if there is a third. I would be surprised, very surprised, if there were four.
Yeah, you know, don't forget about the Big 12, too, who could very easily send their own two or three teams in there as well this year. How many can make it for the SEC? I think you nailed the four. I think it comes down to Georgia, Texas, in this order, too. Georgia, Texas, Ole Miss, and Alabama. Yep. I think that's what it – and Ole Miss and Alabama are such wild cards here. And I'll put LSU on the back end of that as a dark horse that could make it, because I continue to go back and look at LSU's schedule. And it is weird through the month of September, but then it's very, very manageable down the stretch for LSU. Remember, that's a schedule that has USC and UCLA in September on top of a road trip to South Carolina. But after that, You host Ole Miss at Arkansas, at A&M. Okay, they get Bama at home. They're going to be going to Florida late in the year, where I think that's going to be a team that's given up already. Then Vanderbilt and Oklahoma at home. Like, man, LSU could be that dark horse that the SEC gets in. And you know what? I'll drop it right here. LSU will make it to the playoff this year. SEC is going to get three teams in. They're going to get Georgia, they're going to get Texas, and LSU will be a backdoor, kind of a last-second backdoor in for the SEC. Why? I don't know, because I think they got a lot of talent, man, and I think that schedule's doable. The SEC could get up, I think all five of those teams could, if the math works out, to where their schedules and their records are comparable to what everybody else in college football does, and that's the big question mark here. It's like, okay, what other team steps up from the Big Ten? What happens if Luke Fickell and Wisconsin decide they want to be something this year? Or, the NC States of the world from the ACC. Like, what happens when those teams start getting hot? Then that's when the College Football Playoff Committee is going to really have to sit down and decide, okay, who's the best four? Who's the best 12? Or whatever they want to do this year.
Exactly. And the quotes that you mentioned, who is the best? It's all going to come down to that.
Who's the most deserving?
When you look at it. Because, yeah, for all you know, a team like Utah is going to come out and be the second team in the Big 12, but they're sitting at 10-2 and lost to Colorado and Cincinnati. But then all of a sudden, there's Ole Miss, who's also sitting at 10-2 and lost to what? Alabama and Georgia, who are guaranteed in the, you know, just something, so many. Who's deserving?
I can see it now. I can't wait for the controversy in
there
December.
There won't be any, because that's why we went to 12. Oh! Everything's going to be happy.
Oh!
Don't forget about that. Yeah,
there's about that.
Everybody is going to be very happy. The 13th team will not have an argument at all.
No, they'll be fine. They'll be okay. They'll be totally understanding.
Yes.
Can't wait for that. Well, hey, speaking of that, can't wait for Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network. He joins us after this.
Are on the line with Jacob Goetz on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Monday edition of On the Line. It's the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goetz. Christian Griffin joining us in the studio today, filling in for Uncle T-Bone. And we've been trying to do this for a few weeks, and between schedules and technology issues and things like that, we have not been able to make this conversation happen, but I'm hoping that we can do it today. We've got Jacob Hillman from the Auburn Sports Network with us on the phone lines. Hillman, are we able to take a few minutes of your time away from the golf course to talk a few Auburn athletics things?
You know, I think I finally have gotten through to the Auburn Network phone lines, beyond the line phone lines, and we are ready to go. I mean, the last time we talked, we were previewing the men's golf national championship.
Oh, my goodness.
And since then, we've won a couple championships, hired a couple of coaches, and heck, the SEC has added officially two more teams to the conference.
Yeah, it's been kind of hectic over the last few weeks on all accounts. And so, look, man, all I know is every time I see you or see you on social media, you're out hitting a golf ball somewhere on a different course. I mean, I guess we are missing our invites, and you're just having to go out and only thinking about us on Monday afternoons, huh?
Look, we're trying to get the handicap down and get it consistently under 10. And once we do that, then maybe I'll showcase my skills in front of others.
Okay. All right. Well, whenever you get to, you know, shoot under par, then we'll go play and we'll just have to show you up. But no, man, I know it's off season. I know you guys are taking it easy for the little bit of time that you have, and we're all trying to do that before everything gets ramped back up. And so, yeah, I can't believe it's been that long since we've talked. And you mentioned it, man. It's been a busy few weeks for Auburn Athletics with championships, and as you mentioned, coaches being hired as well. I mean, it's a good time in Auburn Athletics, and I think when you hear people talk about it, it's just a lot of positive momentum moving in the athletic department right now.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And obviously there's a ton of excitement just looking ahead to the football season, as well as volleyball and soccer in the fall. But I mean, yeah, if you just look back to the way Auburn closed out the spring with the men's golf national championship, as well as coming second in the NCAA men's track and field championship, including an event national championship in the 4x100, it really does show that everything's clicking on all cylinders. And I mean, that men's golf team was probably the best of all time, and that's not really exaggeration. I think that what they were able to do last year, 10 tournament wins, finish on a six or I think it was a seven tournament winning streak, Jackson Koivin taking home every single Player of the Year award. Yeah, it was incredible. And obviously they're going to return four of the guys that were in the lineup of the national championship. J.M. Butler has already gone on to PGA Tour Americas. He's having some success there. So looking ahead to next season, bringing in the number one prospect in the country and Billy Davis, it's going to be awesome to see what that men's golf team does. And it's going to be exciting to see what track and field is able to do under Coach Leroy Burrell in his third year as well.
Well, something that we had Britt Bowen on, was that last week or the week before? All the days are running together. But we had Britt on to talk about Auburn softball and Auburn women's basketball, mm-hmm. two sports that are really on a roll. And heck, we've had more news since Britt was with us on the softball side of things. I want to get your thoughts on the new head coaches and then try to get some updates on players for Auburn softball. But, yeah, it's a unique situation, right? Auburn softball has hired mm-hmm. co-head coaches, Kate and Chris Malvo, who have been hitting the trail. They've been hitting it hard, and, man, they seem fired up to be the new co-head coaches of Auburn softball.
Yeah, very much so. And I think the Malvos, what they bring to the table is kind of what they brought to Tennessee a few years ago was just an offensive mindset to really try and bring, just again, like I said, the offense, bring improvement to that and finding a way to get back to Oklahoma City and contending for SEC championships, because we know where Auburn can be. I mean, as recently as 2023, Auburn finished third in the SEC, and obviously has been went to a regional every year under Coach Mickey Dean. It was just all about getting over that hump to the Super Regional and on to Oklahoma City. So I do think that this staff that has been built, obviously Riker Chasen as the pitching coach, and DJ Sanders as the fourth assistant, that it's a really interesting foursome of those characters. Obviously, you have the offensive mindsets of the Malvos and DJ Sanders, who's had a very successful collegiate playing career as well as a professional career. I think it's very interesting to how she's going to connect to the student athletes, and then Riker Chasen coming over from Ole Miss for the pitching, and brought in already, like you mentioned, several players from the transfer portal. Mm-hmm. And I really think that the way they've hit the portal has been impressive, bringing in some of the top players in the country.
And I know it means a lot to you because that's one of the sports that you are very, very involved with in terms of broadcast for the Auburn Sports Network. And look, that's not a program that has lost the fan base or lost the support or anything. They're looking for a little bit more. And that, you know, Mickey Dean got them to the postseason every year. They were just looking to get back and to take that next step consistently. And from what I'm hearing from these co-head coaches and with the portal news that they're already doing, just working so hard already. I mean, it seems like they are ready to help Auburn take that next step.
Yeah, and obviously this fan base is always going to think back to the 2016 run to the national title, Game 3 against Oklahoma, and just how special that run was. And I just think that the Malvos, it's interesting. Softball, it's probably it's happened before with co-head coaches. I Tennessee several years ago has done it, and other programs around the country. So it's probably less rare in this sport than any other sport, obviously, for there to be co-head coaches. But I just think the way they carried themselves in that opening press conference, and I know that it seems like every new head coach wins the press conference, but I thought it was very important that when you have co-head coaches that they do show that they're level-headed, they're ready to go, mm-hmm. and locked in, and they certainly did. So I'm excited to see what we get out of this team next year in 2024. Obviously, they're going to start in Clearwater, so we're gonna see right off the bat how ready this team is, how ready this program is for the bright lights, because that is some of the best teams in the country in that opening weekend series.
Jacob, man, good to hear your voice. Christian here with you now. We're talking softball, and this being today being the addition of Texas and Oklahoma joining the mm-hmm. SEC. Obviously, those two teams are powerhouses in the softball department, playing each other in the national championship, Oklahoma with the four-peat. Other than softball, where do you see that Texas and Oklahoma combined make the biggest impact in the entire conference with one of their sports?
Yeah, it's really interesting because obviously Texas is coming off a Big 12 title in football, and they are poised for another big season in football as well. But I look at Oklahoma as their baseball season last year, winning the Big 12 and what they've done. They were down in men's basketball a little bit, but like you said, they also won 10 games in football, and it's just really exciting to see those programs. Gymnastics is another big one with Oklahoma, mm-hmm. and they've always had success in that sport. So I really do think that both these teams bring a ton to the table, and it's just going to make the most competitive conference in the country that much more competitive. And just in the world we're in now, it's crazy how much everything changes. Obviously, the ACC added Cal, Stanford, and SMU today, and the Big Ten is adding Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA. Just it's unbelievable where we've come since just maybe 3 years ago when the SEC announced the additions of Oklahoma and Texas. And obviously, you know, some things I don't love as much, like the demise of the Pac-12. I still love the Pac-12, always staying up late, and that'll still happen with the West Coast teams, but it's going to be a little bit different when it's Oregon hosting Ohio State and whatnot. So I just think that Texas and Oklahoma, they bring a ton to the table and really round out the SEC nicely. I think it still keeps it geographically central to the Southeast, and obviously bring a lot of championship caliber programs to the table.
Yeah, it's nuts to think that the SEC announced Texas and Oklahoma. I mean, that seems like it was yesterday, but that's been a few years, and now here we are, July 1 of 2024, and it's official. It's like 100%. Like, it is now in stone that the SEC is adding Texas and Oklahoma and all the other teams that you mentioned across the country going to different conferences too. New world, new era that we live in terms of college athletics and the conferences that we once knew. Jacob Hillman of the Auburn Sports Network with us here on the Monday edition of On the Line. I know you're over on that side of town every day, and I was over there last week or maybe the week before when the Malvos were introduced as the co-head coaches for Auburn softball, and I saw the renovations that they're doing at Plainsman Park. Man, they've merely made some progress, and it's going to be something special there moving forward in the springs.
Yeah, as I look out my office window and I'm able to see Plainsman Park just across the street, it's wild to see that progress come along, and a lot of it's going to be nearly ready once football season comes along. So when everyone comes into town for kickoff of the Plains on August 31st against Alabama A&M, it's going to be really special for a lot of those baseball fans to see that progress. And yeah, it's just so important for that program. I obviously didn't have the season that Coach Thompson and the staff won it last year, but the buy-in's there, and the fan turnout has been there. Obviously, record crowds came out last season, especially in those Arkansas and Tennessee series. This is going to change the way this that Auburn baseball games are played. The atmosphere is going to be just incredible and really elevated to match some of the top in the SEC. You have the Mississippi States and the Ole Misses and the LSUs and the Arkansas, and you got to keep up. Vanderbilt's obviously doing crazy renovations as well as Tennessee to their baseball stadium. So that's what it is. Now we talk about the expansion and everything, but you still got to keep up with those facilities, and Auburn's doing just that, and everything's on track, and it's looking great so far.
Yeah, some of those stadiums, man, that these SEC teams are pumping money into, it's absurd, the charts and the graphics and the pictures that they've come out with, that what they're planning on doing. I mean, Vanderbilt's the one that came to mind for me. It's just, it's absurd to see the amount of money. It's exciting, though. It's exciting to see the money that they're putting into baseball around this conference. And look, that's what makes it the best, and it's really not close.
Right, and I mean, and here's the thing. It doesn't stop there. Obviously, the North End Zone project has been approved for the video board, and there's plenty more to come on that North End Zone. I think Athletic Director John Cohen said it best, that they're still in the dream phase. They're leaving room for further expansion, premium seating on that north side, and that's part of it. You know you're going to have to keep growing and building and improving. So always making sure that there's a plan for the future is so, so important, and I think that that John Cohen, as well as the entire administration, has done a great job with that vision.
Well, I know it's Monday, man, and we're about to let you go, but I'll give you some good news, if that's okay, here on this Monday, July 1st of 2024. We are
always happy for that, Jacob.
That's right.
Please bring me good news. We're always ready for it.
It sounds like your golf game's not giving you the good news you're looking for, but that's okay.
It's hit and miss. Hit and miss.
Is that hit and miss the golf ball or just your game hit and miss?
The game, yeah. sometimes we'll see a difference in 14 strokes between one round, and that's not what we're looking for. We got to keep it low.
Hey, as long as you're telling me that you haven't been looking in the woods the entire time for your ball here while you've been talking, then we're on the upside.
No, we're in the office today. Like Jacob said, it's July 1st. It's not July 4th yet.
Ah, okay. Well, here's my piece of good news before we let you go. We are 61 days away from Auburn football kicking off, my friend.
Can't wait.
It's going to be awesome.
Kick off on the plains.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, kick off on the plains. And we'll talk about that a lot leading up to it. About 2 months now from football season. And so we're going to talk to you periodically throughout the rest of this summer. Next week, we'll be previewing SEC Media Days. And then we'll be at SEC Media Days in Dallas coming up. And then you'll have a couple of weeks there at the end of July. And then fall practice starts, Hillman. And once we get there, it is on, man. We'll get ready for all the fall sports. And, of course, our partnership with you guys at the Auburn Sports Network. Excited to get into year two of that with football over on Wings 94.3. And so as we let you go, plug everything, tell people what they need to know. I know it's summer, but kind of get them ready for what they can expect.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Jacob Hillman AU, and then follow at AU Sports Network on Twitter. Talking Tigers podcast still coming out every Monday at 7 Central. So Voice of the Tigers, Andy Bertram, doing great work there. But, hey, I'm going to make sure that we go less than a month before we talk again right here on the line because that's just too long.
I know, man.
Between conversations and we got to get ready for football season and excited for everything that's coming in July and like you said for another season partner with the Auburn Network.
That's right, man. Always appreciate you and your time and everybody over at the Auburn Sports Network. Have a great week and we will talk to you next Monday. All right.
That's right. Talk to you next Monday, guys. War Eagle.
Thanks so much. Positivity is key here on the program. Always appreciate good friend of mine, Jacob Hillman, from the Auburn Sports Network. He's with us every Monday at 3:30 right here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap it all up here on the Monday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line on ESPN 106.7. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
Winding down here on the Monday edition of On the Line here on ESPN 106.7. Hey, we appreciate you all being with us here on the show today. Been a lot of fun, man. No Uncle T-Bone in the studio, but Christian Griffin has filled in just fine and done a fantastic job and been a lot of fun and good to be back in the studio. I hate that it's a short week we got today. And we got tomorrow, and then that's it for us in terms of on the line from 2 to 4. No show on Wednesday, Thursday, with it being 4th of July, and then Friday, so the days leading up and after that as well. And so if you missed any of the show today, we've talked Texas, Oklahoma. We've talked recruiting. We just talked to Jacob Hillman. We've had some fun hypothetical conversations about the college football playoff. It's been a lot of fun. So if you missed any of that today, be sure you go and catch it with the podcast. You can find it at our station website, ESPNAU.com. And as we wrap up the show, Christian, before we get out of here, you wanted to give your worst of the weekend. We didn't get back to that. Your worst from the weekend in sports. Got a couple of minutes. What you got?
Well, it's funny because it started out as it was going to be the best of the week. A really good tournament, the Rocket Mortgage in Detroit.
Yeah, lot of storylines here.
A lot of storylines. I think that was your worst of the week as well. But what turned the best of the week to the worst of the week was 15-year-old Miles Russell making his PGA Tour debut. Yes, you heard it correctly. 15-year-old at the PGA Tour. Shot a 74 and then a 71, missed the cut at 1-under, which, all things considered.
I mean, that's a tournament where they won at what, like 19-under or
right,
something like that?
Yes. But, and this brings up the entire conversation of how officials and reporters need to be asked questions or have to go through something to be able to ask certain questions. There was a reporter that asked him after day one. He said, "You're the only player in the field that if you click on your profile on the PGA Tour app, your height and weight is not listed. So, what is your current height and weight?" And Russell kind of looked around like,
"What?
and then told the answer, and the guy chuckled and responded with, "Well, what's that waist size?" And
oh my gosh.
You know, I just and it's and I mean it by it's the worst of the week now, because this storyline has taken over the fact, if you search his name, it's the stories of this now that are overtaking a 15-year-old shooting one under in the PGA tournament.
In one of the major, it's not a major, but it's one of the elevated events on the tour.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, 15 years on, I mean, he chipped in for birdie. Was that was that Friday maybe that he chipped in for a birdie? And I mean, the guy was, or not even a guy, the kid was playing really well. And yeah, like you said, had something that he could be really proud of, and then you get, I'm just going to say it, you get weird people, weird reporters that ask dumb questions. You had the guy a few weeks ago that asked the question or made the comment to Caitlin Clark about the throwing hearts, right? Because she'll like look at her family and she'll give them like the heart symbol with her hands, and then he was like, "Why don't you just and this is
just
this
look
is
at
not,
me and do that."
Yeah, he was like, "Throw me one of those next time," or something like that. It's like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? Stop. And they're not all like that. Most of them aren't like that. But it's the few people, not just in reporting, not just in journalism, but just in general, where it's like, man, they ruin it for everybody else because you can't control yourself. You can't handle yourself in a professional environment. Not to mention, you're just asking weird questions. Like, be a reporter. Ask a question that matters. Ask something that is actually going to benefit you. And I'll say this too, not to go down this rampage, I guess, but I would like journalism to get back to being reportive journalism, not, hey, let's see if we can ask this guy a question and get him
to get him to
let's
bite on it.
Yeah, let's see if he'll trap himself. Yeah, I just, that's where it is, and it is what it is. But quickly, before we leave, best of the weekend for me, another one. How about Suni Lee? Back to the Olympics, back to Paris. She will be representing the United States on the Olympic team. Her, Simone Biles will be there. There's a really stacked group. They said this was the most difficult team to make ever in the history of USA Gymnastics. And Suni Lee, former Auburn gymnast, she'll be back, battling back from some serious injuries. And you could see she was very emotional, said she didn't think she'd ever get back to this point. But she'll be in Paris coming up in the end of this month. She'll be representing Team USA.
Yeah, talked about how her mental health meant so much to her and how she wouldn't have been here if she hadn't got the help that she needed. I thought you were going to talk about the Lakers being the hardest team to get a part of. It was Bronny James making the roster with the draft.
We went almost 2 hours without talking about Bronny James. Well, oh well. I mean, there's thoughts on that. Maybe that'll be for tomorrow's show. Maybe I'll go on a little rampage about that for absolutely no reason. Christian Griffin, thanks so much, brother. Appreciate you coming in today.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Hey, we're back tomorrow. Final show of the week. Okay, it'll be a jam-packed one, so be sure that you're here 2 to 4 right here on ESPN 106.7. He's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Until tomorrow, 2 to 4 right here on ESPN. Stay safe. I'll talk to you later.